Let's go down to the Urban Homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, help the garden grow.
Singing,
oh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
Welcome to the Urban Homestead Radio. We are your hosts, Anise,
Justin,
Jordan. Okay, you want me to do it?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So, hey everybody, thanks for joining us. This is our first episode.
You want to do this for a while?
Louder.
Louder?
Yeah.
Say it. What are you going to talk about?
Boy. Everybody got silent all of a sudden when you hit the live button. We're all lively till you hit the button.
We want to talk about our passions, so what our passions would be. Justin.
Plants, gardening. Mm-hmm. So.
And what about yours, Jordan?
Chickens.
Mm-hmm. More chicken.
Animals, kitchen. Mm-hmm. Sustainable living.
Yeah, so it's been a long time coming. It's something we've always wanted to do for a while, and we're thrilled to finally see some of the, I guess, dreams or things on our to-do list come to fruition. So we're sitting in our backyard. On a nice spring day and enjoying hearing the chickens in the background and the birds
and the freeway
yeah, which is just you can stone's throw away. Want to talk about like what the garden's looking like right now?
Well, we have fortunately had a very great winter in terms of rainfall, got us out of the drought, so everything's looking really nice.
6 years coming.
Yeah, it's long overdue, mm-hmm. but we got bailed out the past couple months. We were able to turn over the yard, so it looks really nice. And
I think they said we're out of drought, right?
That's what they said.
Yeah.
I mean, Northern
the
California.
Reservoirs are filled.
Yeah, Northern California, I think. But mm-hmm. Southern California.
I think we need about 5 years of rain to actually really recover, though.
Yeah.
I think we got normal rainfall this year of about 20 inches. And the last 6 years, we barely got 4 or 5, something like that.
The damage is done on the trees, though.
Yeah.
So it was brutal. It was a brutal 5 years, drought-wise. We lost some things. We had to change what we grew.
Grapes.
What we grew when we grew it. And we just had to change how we grew and what we grew. Crop failures and successes, and loss. So...
Garden evolves with with the seasons and what our situation is. And going more toward natives and adapting, because it's all about adapting. You can't, you gotta just go with the flow. And then it's been we've been blessed with the rain, but we also experienced a loss in our family. As many of you know, our father passed away suddenly back in December of 2016. And so...
Dedicated to
him. Yeah, this is all dedicated to him because this was... he loved...
One of the ideas he wanted to do.
Yeah, and sharing with the community. So we want to carry on some of his work and feel this is one of ways we can honor him. And do that, and like I said, share our passions with everybody, and help you guys learn what mistakes from our mistakes, and give you some inspiration to be the change.
So we're going to try to explain what we do and how we do it, our successes and failures, what not to do, and so hopefully there's a lot of things on the plate, and we hopefully get around to everything that we want to do.
And what would you, there's also some other things we like to see on the show. You want to talk about that, Jordan?
And what,
like music, and you want to cut?
Oh, I mean, we'll try to bring in some local musicians, but make it more of a community type event rather than just about farming and gardening.
Guest speakers. Prairie
Home Companion, kind of thing.
Yeah. Homestead, music, stories, just sharing, and
a little bit about us.
A little bit about our history. People want to know what we're doing, how we're doing it, and always ask us questions. So, what about
in our natural habitat, right?
Yeah. Anything you want to talk about?
No, you good?
So, can you try and explain a little bit about what a lot of folks already kind of know? I mean, a lot of folks, or at least people who know you, they know when your dad started, and when you bought the house, and go back through that process real briefly, just to kind of summarize, because the first podcast would be a perfect way to kind of remind everybody that you guys are really the pioneers.
So how far back do you want to go? How far back do you want to go?
As far back as you comfortable.
Start New Zealand?
Yeah, so
start in New Zealand?
You could want to read out that piece of paper.
But now, remember, this is a summary. Okay, and so I know there's a lot.
No, that's good, because this is, you can slice and dice it and make it what you want. But I was saying how far back. I mean, we can go to 85 when Dad bought the place, or we go to 70s when in New Zealand, where you know, some people know that, most people do. But
start in 85 when you bought this particular home, because this year is your 100th. Yeah. So like Martha said, you should mention that.
We can say where you migrated from to here, but definitely focus on 85 and forward.
Yeah, right. The biggest thing right now is for you guys to lose
wow. You're nervous, and it's okay.
We got alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Hey, if you all need a little drink beforehand in some of these.
If you do that, we don't know if you do that.
For what it's worth, Jordan, you guys sound great, and I can hear the freeway behind you.
And Marley barking.
Jordy, you want to say something?
No, they have to do what they want, right?
No, she was saying we want to tell some of the story, and we pass it on like we did at the... You want to start, or let me start?
It was 1985? Starting.
No, I started in New Zealand.
You said start with 85, because the house is in there.
Okay, all right. You want to talk about the birthday then?
The actual house of the Yorkin Homestead was built in 1917. So this year, it is turning 100 years old, which is pretty exciting. It's lasted this long. It's been a good house. Mm-hmm. It's seen a lot of things, and one of the things about these houses, they're built old, is they were kind of built to be self-sufficient, you know, with the high ceilings and the windows. So that has made a lot of what we do natural and easy. Like our kitchen was built for canning and pantry. Mm-hmm. It has a California cooler, which means it has ventilation from the attic to the cellar. So you put like fruit in there, and it's all these slats that go all the way up, so the cold air goes from the cellar all the way up to the attic, and you actually can store butter in there and stuff that lasts long. So it's really cool seeing how they were sustainable back a long, long time ago, and you just go with it. You just go with what was in there.
Lots of windows,
high
lighting,
ceilings,
natural lighting,
the eaves, and
wood floor.
And so Dad did see that potential of working with old houses, what existed, and that's what the Urban Homestead Project motto, I would say. He always pointed us to work with what's existing and try not to, like, you know, it was like without money and, you know, everybody can build, well, not everybody, you know, with money you can build one of the greatest sustainable homes out there, but a lot of people have things that are existing, and that's one of the lessons he's taught us, was work with what existed, what worked, and what, you know, existed, and try to go with that rather than, you know, rip everything out and put in all the green, sustainable, latest, greatest things.
Sometimes, like, that, like, secondhand. It's like old houses are just reusing and revitalizing old houses. Mm-hmm. Are, you know, and a lot of people have old houses and live in old houses. So, and go and using that to your advantage to live a more sustainable life.
But the number one, besides the house, was in pretty bad shape. We had some before and after pictures that were pretty scary. But the, what Dad really liked about the place was the size of the yard. So because we were homeschooled, we were, and we just were came from Florida on 10 acres and sold that to come out here to go to school. And he bought the biggest place he could afford. The house wasn't needed work. It was definitely a fixer-upper. But the yard, where he saw potential. And for us kids, it was we were surrounded on two sides by a nursery, so it's like our own. We can play around, and wasn't quite in the city.
And first thing you did was plant a garden.
Yeah, so the first garden was over there in the corner. We had some. It was a hobby garden. This used to be a whole 30 by 30 patio, concrete. It was all concrete. We could mark out where the concrete was. So when we were kids, we had obstacle courses,
roller skating,
badminton.
Shopping cart, polo, no. We'd play all these roller skates, all this stuff.
And the garden was on the outskirts.
Yeah. So the garden was on the outskirts, but the patio was great for us to play as a kid. And then, so coming from 10 acres, that's what was the best he could do, you know, like this is what. So we would play homeschooled and things. And then when we grew up, we took it out, took out the concrete.
Also, the neighborhood is one of the oldest neighborhoods of Pasadena. So it's kind of a little forgotten neighborhood. So you can kind of exist here and people don't actually, growing up, it was kind of like grown in Cypress. Where's that? And so when Dad took out the yard and the lawn that and turned it over to veggies, he kind of was doing it under the radar. Like, you know, he wasn't out in like these wealthy neighborhoods of Pasadena. He was in a poorer area. So anything that was done was an improvement. So it was like not, you know, there were some neighbors kind of curious about what we're doing and, you know, kind of got a little nosy. And growing up in the neighborhood, it became a time point for the kids my age. They would say, back when you had grass. So it was like to the neighborhood, they talked about it, I guess, because I'd be like hanging out with the kids and like we were talking timelines and like, oh, back when you had grass. And so I guess it was a pivotal moment for the neighborhood, even though they kind of just let it go.
Well, when we first moved in, it was, you know, working class families. People had chickens hanging their laundry outside. So it wasn't, you know, online. So we hung our laundry outside and had a garden. And people had, the lady next door had a garden on the side. We were the ones that literally put it in the front yard. So, or Dad was the one that put it in the front yard. So it was a little odd for, you know, a garden in your front yard, you know, because they had corn. Our neighbors had corn, but it was in the back, you know. So it was unusual. It was like, what are these people doing? You know,
everything took a long time, and it was scavenging. I would say we did the best we could with what little we had. So one of the memories I have is foraging for rocks and hauling them back to the car. So Dad had this idea. He wanted to make the yard pretty. And he wanted landscape rocks, but he wasn't going to buy landscape rocks. He had kids who would carry landscape rocks up a hill to the car, and then we'd come and put them in the yard. So a lot of it was just manhauled and found on the side of the road or scavenged. And often people, when they see the yard, they're like, oh, they want this, and they want to buy it. And to us, it wasn't bought. It was created.
It was 30 years.
Created from whatever we could find. And he loved to landscape, but you know, at that time and, you know, throughout time, it cost a lot of money to make things look great, but he did it on
a budget,
and back.
A lot of recycled stuff,
yeah,
a lot of free stuff.
Creativity.
Free mulch.
Yeah. When they demolished, this nursery was sold and they demolished the vent, we took a hammer and chisel and took out the concrete blocks off the wall.
All the cinder blocks and hauled them out.
Yeah, so we recycled the cinder blocks and some of the blocks
that are here. And the broken concrete that they had.
Mm-hmm. The concrete blocks were chiseled off from the walls before they hauled them away.
He hated seeing anything go to waste. And
windows from the shed, windows from Habitat for Humanity. the doors, Habitat for Humanity.
That tree was free, that big tree. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first trees. Mm-hmm. It's about 30, 25 years old. Mm-hmm. So we got it free. So
when we go hiking, he'd bring cuttings back. So some of the rosemary that we have is probably descendants of our original 30-year-old rosemary that we bought back from the mountains, which was a cutting, and we planted that, and that grew. And then, you know, they get woody, you have to cut them back, but, you know, that's how we started. It was just finding things. It was irises we dug up from the mountains and scavenging.
Yeah, well, we found stuff on the side of the road, too.
Mm-hmm. Found a lot of stuff on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. How old were you guys when you moved here, each of you?
Was that 30? 30? So I was
eight years old.
Yeah, I was 8 years old.
And then how old were you?
I was 11.
And then you?
It's confidential.
Probably about two.
Okay. She was a baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
we grew up doing this. That, I mean, for me, it was... I don't really remember anything before this. And people ask, how can you make things grow? And it's like, I don't know how not to make things grow. Yeah. It, to me, it's just natural, in, you know, to just pick up something and make it grow. And to the point where I mentioned that sometime to somebody recently about I plant things in neighbors' gardens. Take cuttings and just stick them in their yards. And a lot of the plants on the neighborhood I recognize because I did them as cuttings in the kids. So it was almost like a gorilla garden. I was like, they need plants, they need color. And I would stick. And I could see all my plants in the neighborhood. And it was just natural because I came from a father who had a green thumb.
And grandfather.
And a grandfather. And great-grandfather. And it, to me, it was just... Mm-hmm. I grew up that way and I just kept doing it.
And then when we started, you know, our online presence back in 2001, what Jordy was saying, this was normal for us. You know, we grew up, you know, making solar ovens out of cardboard boxes. We had a worm bin. We compost and
we
hauled
the dishwater out by the bucket.
For gray water bucket, gray water. So when the GMOs in the corn went into the tacos, you know, Dad was saying, you know, we could protest at the San Diego...
you can go
World
back far.
Trade, yeah.
You can go back farther when the edible flowers.
Oh, the edible flowers, yeah, that was 95. So, but then I was just saying how we went and we're like, doesn't everybody do this? Who would read about, you know, who would care that, you know, that was like, go journal about it. And it
took a while to realize that it wasn't normal.
Normal, yeah.
You know, I mean, just, yeah, like Annie said, but we were doing gray water long before I even knew that was not normal. Because I think one time, like, I think the kitchen sink, like, kind of the pipe broke or something. So Dad just took off the pipe, put a bucket underneath it, said gray water, and hauled it out to the yard. And that's, it, to me, I was like, oh, cool. This was your chore. And nowadays, it's kind of like, I saw a blog and somebody says, do that. And I'm like, really? And they actually wrote a whole blog post about how to... And he, and thrift stores and just recycling. He was big on mm-hmm. recycling and not wasting anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we find a lot of stuff on the side of the road and try not to buy things. And then when the nursery moved, we found some stuff over there, mm-hmm. landscaping things. And then we found it on the freeway, the side of the road.
So yeah, then why don't you talk about how our first forays into then go back to 95 when the first edible flower, which launched us into the. The farming aspect.
There was a drought in the early 90s where we had the St. Augustine grass, and the issue was, you know, Dad kept watering it, and we had water, and it never looked that great. So we got some tree mulch delivered, or we went to pick it up and brought it home by the bucket and put down newspaper and killed the front lawn.
It was 89.
That was about 89, mm-hmm. 90. And it took us a while, so we did, every Sunday we'd do like 3 feet, we put down newspaper and put mulch, and then we go, either if it was delivered, then we'd do more. If we had to go pick it up, we'd do 3 feet at a time, and so we started from the fence, and then we went all the way to the front, and it was looked pretty bad, because it was just dead and brown. Then I think the herb garden started next, or was it the vegetables next?
I think he cut out the holes in the yard. I remember the zucchini.
Yeah, I think so the vegetables first.
First,
then
we got some horse manure from the stables and dug some holes in the mulch and planted zucchini. We figured nobody would steal zucchini if it was in the front yard, so we had to be pretty desperate to do that. So we, something that was not, not, something that was grew easily and nobody would steal. So that went pretty well. And then
we had a spread wildflower seeds.
We did 2 or 3 beds. Remember the three? Mm-hmm. The three
wildflower seeds
surrounded by the river rock that you were talking about.
Yeah, the river rock. The herbs.
So we got some like penny seeds from some mail order catalog, penny wildflowers, and did three little beds in the front yard. And had some started decorating and things, and then El Nino showed up, and
nasturtiums everywhere.
The place exploded. So we had all these flowers, and well, edible flowers and wildflower, and then Dad read in the papers, local papers, weekly.
Yeah, the Pasadena Weekly, a local tea shop,
was using edible flowers.
To decorate. He's like, people buy this stuff. He's like, we have it. So
we took, we put it in a box and took it down there, and that was how it started in 1995. So we've been selling flowers for 23 years.
Word of mouth, because we had the best product, and so yeah, people
we
would
just
spread
pick it and deliver it within a couple hours. So it was a thing.
Then we went to Heirloom Vegetables because people liked everything that we grew.
Well, the .com boom happened. I mean, bust happened. So the first thing that people did was cut out all the extra stuff, and so the flower business was getting cut into because people were doing parties but not paying extra for the flowers.
Edible flowers, yeah.
Well, so Dad said, "Okay, let's adjust." And
so then we looked at trying to grow salad mix or something like that, but the pricing was not profitable. So we ended up, we found Marston's, I think it was, who was he first? Yeah. Was he our first
for the
food one?
I think
produce one.
I think we were doing herbs
and tomatoes.
We did herbs to exploring foods and tomatoes. Then we went into the salad.
Well, meanwhile, we were growing food for ourselves. We,
yeah.
Were,
we were always,
we were
growing,
always growing food for ourselves, but not selling it because we couldn't undercut the prices.
Yeah. So we have the before and after pictures. They, so they're wild parrots. Yes. Yeah, so another story we had about the front yard was divided in two sections. We had one side that had thing, and then we had a 12 by 12 area in the front yard that was, we took out the grass for an herb garden. So we got some seeds, and this time we scraped out all the grass and made a pathway like a keyhole garden. So one of the stories goes is that after we had scraped everything out and marked where things go, we said, my dad said, "Where's the middle?" So he said, "Where's the middle of this? It's 12 by 12, you know?" Dad goes out there, puts a stick in the ground.
That's the middle.
That's the middle.
And guess
so
what?
So we go, we take exactly a tape measure, middle. Take a tape measure, and it was right exactly in the middle.
It was the, it was nailed. We have a Darvay's eye. It's like you can sight something.
It nailed it right in the middle. Because here's the middle where we're going to plant this thing. So you put
it's
thing,
still there.
And the
lemon verbena is still there.
The plant that we planted right there
still
is still there.
Still alive, still gone.
23 years later. So that was, it was shock. I mean, one, that thing still sticks in my mind where he spotted
he could
that.
See something.
I mean, not like close. It was, it was exactly the middle of the, and I think that stuck in my mind for 23
years.
That's
Dad in a nutshell. He would always do that. It was like, you'll be, and he's like, nope.
Yeah. No, so he just stuck a twig, and he said, here's the middle. Bam. And then he planted that lemon verbena there. 23 years later, it's still there. So we're the only thing left from the original landscaping, but
in the front yard.
In the front yard. Yeah. So, but it was, that was the story how that one went. It was like, that's incredible to nail it exactly. Free eye. What do you call it? Just eyeballed.
Eyeballed
it. Mm-hmm. And it was just, we were just little kids, and just here's in the middle. Get a tape measure. Okay, that's gonna stick for a while. So Dad, that one, yeah.
Well, apparently we have the same knack because
I've done that too.
No, we have the same knack, and I can feel something and say it's like 2-3 pounds, and people are like. So I was like, okay, I have to wait to just humor you guys, and I put it on. They're like, wait, how do you do that?
Yeah.
It's like I just know.
Yeah, I've done that with about this cafe I work at, and they're trying to hang something up. I'm like, that's the middle, and they're like, no. I said, that's the middle, and then they let me know. Okay.
Or how about the time? They said, for their apple pies, they said, all the apples there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's not going to be enough.
Not gonna be enough.
How do you know? I said, not going to be enough.
It's not going to be enough.
And I said, you'll probably be short about 5 pounds. They were short about 5 pounds. And they're just like,
you're just eyeballing. You're like, no, that's not going to work.
How do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. Just
one of the things,
it.
Dad, he purchased this place because of the trees. He had a lot of trees. He loved the trees. There was a beautiful oak in the front yard, and there was a bunch of a tree in the corner. I mean, it was shady. He loved trees coming from Florida. And he always said God had other plans, because one by one, the trees fell.
Mysteriously,
they just fell. Like
wind,
it'll rot, and he just, like, he would get upset that the tree fell, because he loved these trees. But he would, you know, take it down.
There was another tree in the corner right over there by the neighbor's place.
And he says...
And one morning, there was a tree, like, it was a tree thing like this. One morning, it missed that house, missed our house.
And went straight down the middle. So all these trees fell on the property, and Dad, he often referenced that. He would say, I had plans, and then the plans changed, and I just went with it. And that's the only reason the garden is as it is, because the trees were taken out one by one without Dad's help. Mm-hmm. He loved these trees. He protected them. And they just took themselves out.
They offered
and
our
opened
place
up
shade,
this land,
especially without AC.
Yeah, he, you know, the oak tree in the front, he was really upset about that one. Mm-hmm. But you had to take it down because it leaned against the house. He took it down.
Well, they said, no, they did the...
Yeah, they root pruned it.
They root pruned it, and then it got
city,
oak root.
The city.
Oak root rot. And then the oak root rot, so some rain and wind started leaning against the house. The city came out and redid the curbing, the sidewalks, and they root pruned both sides. A couple months later, years later, started getting the mold, oakwood fungus, and we're ticked, but we couldn't do. We had that tree was there. We couldn't. The front yard wouldn't look like it.
Yeah,
that
so Dad always pointed there. That out. He had ideas and plans, but what looked like what he got really upset about was losing the trees. But then it turned into opportunity to actually do what we were doing, because he would have never taken the trees out himself, because he did love trees.
And the last tree, one of the last trees we was taken out.
It was rotting.
It was property line.
And
like 6 inches over the property line when they redid the fence.
They cut it.
So we took the tree out. So it's like, hey, 6 inches, we would have to take it out. 6 inches, they take it out.
So all the trees were gone, and it opened up everything, you know. And I guess that's like a lesson you learned as a kid. It was these trees you climbed in, you loved, and then they got taken out, but then this opportunity came out of that.
So you'd say almost nature dictated really what was going to happen here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he said he planned it, it was definitely not.
He would often say he didn't plan any of this.
To the point where when we, I don't know what exactly he got, because, you know, I was young at that point, but when he was knowing that he was going to move to Pasadena to attend the college, he sent away, and I remember coming, it came in a long round tube, and he sent away, it was like a map of Pasadena with
property values,
property ranges, like how much things would cost, and it was all color coordinated, and he laid it on the table, and he looked at it, and he says, I'm looking for a place around this area, and
I can't afford over there.
I can't afford over there. And he said around this area, and so then when he came here, then you actually saw the properties, and we didn't know if any of homes would be for sale in this area. And sure enough, this one it was in the area that he had pointed out, that
because of the property value, he knew he couldn't afford in that area, so he was looking right on there.
And it was close
it was
to the
a mile
school
from
the
his
college
camp, the school that he was going to.
And for us, it was near the Arroyo Seco, so we could hike as kids. It was next to Rose Bowl. We'd ride our bikes. So,
looking back, there's a lot of
coincidences. Yeah. There's no such thing as coincidences.
Well, the orientation of the house, too, yeah, on the other side of the street wouldn't have been as good. But the orientation, how it's set up, having the empty property around us, allowed for the sunlight, the freeway kept
development
down.
And the school, it's like we have no neighbors. We're sitting here. We literally have no neighbors on three sides. And then they're thrilled to have us as neighbors, and we're thrilled to have them. We actually go over there and teach the kids after school farm to table, or they come over here. So, we're actually going to go on this Friday. Is their Peace Garden dedication,
Thursday.
Which we're going to... Is it Friday or Thursday? I think it is.
Well, it's Friday.
It's Friday. Yeah, so we're going to go check out their garden. So it's a perfect little community here, so...
And then we were talking about somebody brought up the garage.
That was me, yeah.
Yeah, so when we took out the concrete after thing, we were jackhammered on Thanksgiving one year and running a jackhammer at Home Depot. And everybody took a turn on the jackhammer and jackhammered a thing out. So we recycled everything that was usable. So we had the concrete pathways here. One idea we had was to make a sunflower. So if you see that, this was the original. This was not here.
Dad sketched.
We jackhammered each one of these little petals out of this flower here.
Dad drew it out in chalk, and we jackhammered it.
We jackhammered each one out, and then when we were digging out to put it here, we found the foundation for the old garage. So the original garage ended right here. So this is where the original garage was. The previous owner backed it up 10 feet so he could bring his cars through.
He could park his trucks.
To the thing. So without that previous guy moving it there, now the hootenannies, the patio, this area. Like
Dad would point that out. He would say, like, just, I had nothing to do with that if this garage was closed, so things would have been different.
And then one guy said, tear it down or something.
Oh, no. He said, we have people who remembered the house as it was, and they are like, just, can I be honest with you? You know, it was a dump. And it was. I mean, it was the people that had it before, or the people that were, they were renters, so it didn't.
Dad's on potential, though.
It was falling down.
I don't know if they've seen the before and afters.
It's pretty, and there people are like, that's the same garage. We're like, yeah, it's the same garage. Just a new roof, a coat of paint, and some little nice trim, you know, that aren't eaten through. It's the same garage because they built things to last.
Dad saw the potential. Mm-hmm. He's did, and nobody else saw it.
And then he also moved the stuff that he didn't do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he moved the garage 10 feet back. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have anything to say that.
And maybe they built to last, and he knew that he wasn't gonna. You're gonna use. They actually used real wood, and it was quality stuff. So keep as much as you could.
We didn't have people to say tear it down.
Oh no, they said tear it down. They literally said.
Well, Dad, he owned 10 acres in Florida, so there was an investment he had in that. So, the cost of when he sold those 10 acres, the money he had, mm-hmm. bought this house outright. Mm-hmm. So, he was looking for something he could own outright. And he saw it. He saw this place. He saw the potential, and everybody else did see it. They knew it was a rundown place. They knew it. You know, other people would say tear it down or you know destroy it. Don't fix it up. But he looked. He walked around and he saw that the land and the quality of the house was worth something. And he traded 10 acres for this place. And that was he had a vision for this.
100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Then
10 acres for a tenth of an acre.
Oh yeah, so then the
tenth of an acre.
The garden's a tenth of an acre.
So yeah, so that 2001 was genetically modified foods was there was a leak into the tacos and they were having I think it was a World Trade or something down in San Diego. WTO down in San Diego and a bunch of people who were concerned, activists who were concerned about genetically modified food, were going to have a protest down there and we were thinking about going because we were like, you know, we grew up activists as kids, you know, it's like
protests everything.
And you know, we're against the grain. Yeah, thinking outside the box, you know.
Dad, I question
nobody
everything.
Can tell me what to
nobody
do.
Nobody told us what to do.
Yeah, so but then we sat there and we said we could all go, we can make these signs, go down there, spend a day and come back and then what? So we were sitting at the dining room table on one lunch and Dad said, hey, so you know, there's websites out there, Greenpeace and Organic Consumers Association. They're really big and you know, telling people, you know, what was wrong with the you know, our environment and the food and all that stuff. And so he said, well, what can we do that, you know, can counter that we can show? So he said, hey, you know, maybe we just talk about or tell what we do here at the homestead, you know, gardening. I don't know if I said it or it crossed my mind. It was like, why would anybody read about or, you know, care that, you know, we harvested corn today or something, you know, one of those passing comments. And apparently people did care. So
there was no such thing as blogs.
No.
So every entry was hand coded.
Our website is older than Google, YouTube, Facebook.
It's older than the Google search engine, not the actual Google business, but it's older than YouTube, Facebook.
So it's pretty old.
Coded by little bites of HTML before any content management system.
And we did the website or so. We did everything. Everything was in-house.
Everything in-house.
Yeah, we didn't know how Alien fits in that.
No, that's
it. It was quite huge website just to create everything by hand, mm-hmm. and there was no content management system, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It was kind of thrown into learning all this stuff.
My dad taught computers, so that was amazing. Mm-hmm. He had a little bit of knowledge on that.
We started on this GeoCities website, and
then we morphed into Microsoft. Microsoft, but that was still hand coded.
Yeah.
And then got the domain name and went from there.
And that was
we just start writing what we did. Today we did this, and oh, it's hot out. You could go look at the. It's pretty,
almost hilarious.
I know, but people. And then people started following us, and then...
And remember the first request we got, can we tour your property? And I was just like, why? Why? What are you coming to see?
Was it Capital City?
No, Stan.
It was the high school.
Compton, the high school, Compton High. The
it's
guy
2001.
Wrote, and we have photographs of the first tour class. Uh-huh. And it was guy, Compton High School. He brought his kids out here. And we did, we showed him... We were doing survival skills. We showed them how to make fire with bow and drill. I mean, we were just like...
No, we did that, but then the bus driver didn't show up or come back, so they did the...
So we had to entertain them a little more?
We did
sun ovens, we planted fire, seeds, and then we showed them how to make fire out of sticks. it was interesting. But the guy, they loved it, and then after that, it just went... From there,
it was just
and the emails came in, and
yeah, word of mouth.
Was the first press Capital Press or Press?
Yeah,
press
it was Capital Press.
Focus?
No, it was Capital Press.
Capital Press. The other thing was interesting was for the longest time, we refused to have photographs of ourselves on the internet. We refused. We'd have like hands or feet,
or produce,
and people were like, "Who are you?" We'd get emails like people kind of.
The yard spoke for itself.
Yeah, the yard spoke, and Dad always said the work, not the people. We were just instruments. He was always focused the work, not the people. We're just people. We're just instruments of doing something great. And so, I remember Dad did this Pasadena rebate, where we got all these energy efficient products, and Pasadena like kept seeing this guy's name pop up.
Filing for rebates.
You know, who is this? He's taking advantage of every rebate we have. Yeah. So they contacted us.
Low floor toilets.
Yeah.
Refrigerators.
Yeah, and see, Dad has an unusual name,
solar,
so it kept showing
solar,
up.
And light bulbs.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So they contacted.
Free trees, the free shade trees, tree program.
It was just like every rebate passing put out.
So they contacted, and they're like, hey, so what's going on? You know, and they wanted to interview Dad, and there was this little flyer that goes around Pasadena homeowners.
In focus.
And they're like, we want to interview you. And so the guy comes out, Dad gets the interview, then he brings out his camera. And Dad's like, okay, that's the rebate, that's the tree I bought with the rebate. Go take a photo of it. And the guy looked at Dad, and he goes, I don't want a picture of the tree, I want you. Dad goes, no, that's the tree I bought with the rebate. And he's like, no, I want you posing, Daddy. He's just like, I think it was a long time he fought this guy. He refused to be photographed. He's like, there's the tree I bought with the rebate. And he could not understand why they wanted to photograph him. So eventually the guy got Dad to photograph with the tree, and I remember Dad coming in after. He's like, I don't know why they wanted a photo of me. With the tree. He's like, this is really stupid. He's like, why me? I'm not, so, you know. Yeah. And then that was like the first photograph of Dad. And then over time, we realized that, and then Pasadena Star News did something. Mm-hmm. And that was
week
the first,
three,
yeah.
Week
three, Star News was first. We were out the first family photo holding that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then after a while, we found out because we kind of had nothing about ourselves on the internet, it was causing more curiosity, like obsessive curiosity. Like people would obsess, there's a photo, and they post it. And so we said, okay, finally, we'll put a photo of us.
Well, I think people wanted to associate, like they want to see a face and like, oh, they're regular people.
It started causing more controversy or more curiosity, like
distraction.
It was a distraction. Yeah, so we gave in a little bit and kept there. So. And then the media showed up, and then that was over.
Yeah. The rest is history. But the first couple of years, at least on the blog,
a long time, no photographs.
I would say for the first,
only until I redesigned it.
Yeah.
And that one, that green.
I mean,
one.
We would have photos in the media, but not on the blog.
On the yard.
We would not.
Because the one thing was, we thought the yard speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. You know, you could talk.
Pictures worth a thousand words.
Yeah.
It's not about us.
Yeah, it wasn't ever about us. We just thought, you know, hey, there's the garden, take a picture of it.
It's beautiful.
And then people wanted people in there. It's like, why?
And Dad was a math teacher. He was a math teacher, so everything was grafted.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd give me all these numbers, and I'd graft them on the, and he was meticulous in grafting his progress. So he wanted to focus more on the graphs than the people. So we put up the harvest, and then we put up how much we harvested per month,
how much tomatoes
per day.
I mean, we had it down to charts, and this is what
people
we were doing.
People were following us. They were following. They were like, okay, where are they going to get
Dad's
the end of the month?
Math mine, and he would say, okay, kilowatt hours, and then minus this.
Everything.
And he had calculated everything, and I was creating all these graphs for him. He'd come with numbers and put them. He's like, graph that. Okay. So I'd graph that.
Well, literally, when we... After the first year, because we, like I said, always had a garden, but we didn't weigh it. So it was like, how much we grow? I don't know. How much pound? I don't know. So when we actually literally took the poundage, and then at the end of the year, we, and it was 2,000 pounds, and we just looked
2,300.
And we looked at each other like, wow,
really?
A ton? No, that's no. So then we did it. It's okay. And then the next year, 3,000 pounds. Really? So then the next year, we're like, nah. The next year, 4. Then 5, then 6, and then
we pushed ourselves.
7,000 was the record, and then we got into a drought and
busy.
And then traveled the world with the homegrown revolution.
And what happened is we were selling more to the public, so it was like people would show up and want salad. We'd pick, and we didn't have time to wait as much. Mm-hmm. But
it was a good time where we documented everything.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
Like down.
How many eggs?
Yeah, how many eggs we got? How many things? Mm-hmm. Now it's.
Yeah, we don't do that because I don't know.
It'd
be curious. I mean,
we'd be curious to do it again.
Yeah.
Is it possible?
It kind of made it a little harder to. I remember wanting to go eat oranges off the tree, but before I could eat the orange off the tree, I had to go weigh it and put it on the paper, and it kind of made everything a little bit more like.
I don't
want to
pick this.
Do I really want that orange tree? Walk all the way to weigh it.
No.
And then put it down on the paper, and then I can eat it. So kind of, it's a little more freeform now. I can eat off the plant, but.
Yeah.
But what's unique is what people say. We never solicited any media. They always just found us. And what I think, what people were inspired. Like I said, we get emails to this day. Your family changed my family. You inspired me. Just all these, just the humbling things that you just say, wow,
It's quite a feeling when somebody tells you they quit their job and went homesteading full time. You're just like,
yeah, really?
No.
Yeah, so.
Sorry.
Yeah, so it's just this, it's just amazing that,
how it started. If you saw what it started and what it worked. Where it is now, it was, people had to do that. We just documented what we did.
And you had to be able to live with things not being the way you wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Dad had a vision what he wanted to reach, but he, without money and things working out great, you had to live with things nobody else would live with. For instance, for a good number of years, our roof leaked. Our roof leaked for a long, long time. It was every year, Jess would climb up on the roof and put up tarps. Every year it was a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it was always a blue tarp on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would tour our property and they would ask, this is a funny story that we still crack up about. So we'd give people tours of a property and hey, we had a rundown house, the roof leaked, paint was peeling, but hey, that's not about the image, right? And people would sit there and stare at a roof, and it's like full of this whole, it's a big, tall roof, and it's all blue tarped.
On one side, yeah.
On one side, and they're just sitting there looking at it, and you're like, what's the problem? They're like, so why is it blue tarped? Does it, produce anything?
Does it attract the sun?
Does it attract
the sun?
Does it, bring more water? They were trying to put some importance on this blue tarp, and Dad was like,
roof leaks.
We can't afford to fix it. And people actually thought we did it for a reason. They thought we had this, I don't know,
some...
Yeah, because you're supposed to use, red malt. You're supposed to,
make the tomatoes grow better or something.
You're supposed to get more poundage off your tomato if you use red plastic mulch.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a blue tarp. Mm-hmm.
So people were trying to, why
they were
we
trying
had,
to justify, maybe
like,
that was our secret.
Poor,
that was our
it.
Secret why we got so much produce.
Yeah.
And then the other part, people said, you got a tarp on your roof?
Yeah. Because
they literally were like,
Do you know?
Yeah,
your roof leaks.
How do you think it got up there?
Yes.
It just rolled itself up. It was.
The funniest thing, we had a magazine come out to photograph our yard, and it was a blue tarp on the roof. And Dad, he went out and bought a gray tarp. He's like, that's the way it goes. They're not going to,
So I think what we're saying is, and I think a lot of things is.
People want perfection.
It's, that American have that. Because
instant.
Of the culture, extreme makeover,
instant.
Everything's easy.
Perfect.
You put down money, it changes. And so what our 30 years of thing is, it's about sacrifice. You're not going to get everything overnight. It's going to be hard.
Living without.
You're going to live without.
Live with.
Live with. it's going to be a challenge, and it's something that, you know, even though they think it's, I don't know if that's like, not a glamorous, how you said that, like a...
Romantic.
Yeah, homesteading is romantic. Romanticized because of, you know, what they see on TV or just, you know, nostalgic stuff like that. But it sometimes sucks. It sometimes
hurts.
It's a lot of pain. A lot of loss.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. But then there's the beauty
Panic.
Side. Yeah, there's a beauty side where if... And one guy, I remember talking to one guy, he's like, you know, I don't... And this was, wow, almost 15 years ago, because it was one of the first ones. He's like, I don't know how you know, I can't... The world's in such a bad shape, I can't even want... Don't even want to get up in the morning. And he's like, I literally just want to lay in bed and just say, you know...
Until you have chickens screaming at
but
you.
But then I said, you know, I feel the same way, but here's the thing.
The chickens need to be fed.
The chickens need to be fed, the plants need to be watered, and the produce needs
so
to be harvested. So you get your butt out of bed
and
you
to
get
work.
To work. So
and you can't think about how
you can't think. I mean, you have to do it. So, and then, and a lot of people, like I said, were drawn to this, our success, and that's, you know, success meaning the produce that was produced from this place, is because I think they say 80% of people live in cities. So where you think if you have to homestead, you have to, you know, sell and get 10 acres or so, but we were showing with what people could do with what they had and just do something. One thing, you know, people were like, well, if I live in an apartment, what can I do? Plant a couple herbs, use cloth bags, don't let the water run when you're brushing your teeth. Every little step has a big impact. So, and Dad's favorite saying was, one size doesn't fit all. This was our size. Your size might be different. Your journey might be different. So you can't compare us, you know, you can't compare yourself to us, and we can't compare ourselves to you. So, but it's just everybody, you know, growing forward to make a change. So.
I think people are, I don't know, intimidated might be the wrong word, but they see this,
mm-hmm.
and then they say, where they start.
Mm-hmm. It's overwhelming.
If you say, yeah, but that's not now, mm-hmm. 30 years later.
It was
versus,
1 year was solar. Yeah. 1 year was biodiesel. 30,
yeah, 1 year we mm-hmm. we knocked off one major project a year.
Mm-hmm.
Solar, biodiesel, animals or whatever, and roofing.
Yeah, roofing.
We finally got around to roofing the house.
It's a metal roof.
And
it's rainwater
we
safe.
Got up there and... We re-roofed the house. Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna.
Everybody, it was a family thing. Everybody got up.
I'm gonna go put up the chickens. So, all right.
Just keep the gate closed. One, two.
Let's go down to the urban homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the urban homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the urban homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, ooh, help the garden grow.
Singing,
oh, ooh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
The Urban Homestead theme song was written and recorded by Tom Fair. Thanks, Tom.
We've come to the end of this show.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Be sure to tune in again. Until next time, this is Annie,
Justin,
Jordan. Keep on growing.